Do you want to hear something funny? It's actually not really that funny. It's more, I guess, ironic. I wanted to talk about remakes, specifically remakes of films. And what you're listening to right now is actually a remake of this episode, because I did it once and I didn't feel it went right. Maybe that's the filmmaker in me that always wants to do another take or a safety take. But this is the part of podcasting that I struggle with, which is that I can't refine or redo something because there's a lot of spontaneity involved, which is fine because that's part of what's interesting and entertaining about podcast recordings. In any case, today I wanted to talk about remakes. And recently I saw the trailer for It Chapter 2. Being a huge Stephen King fan, of course I'm interested in seeing this film, having seen the first chapter. But it got me thinking, especially with also the remake of Pet Sematary, yet another Stephen King story, I really wanted to explore this idea of remakes, their prevalence, their significance, and even their effectiveness. Of all the films I could consider favorites or even just influential to me, a good number of them have been remakes, which is to say that at some point it was already a film that was released and someone came along and decided this needs to be done again. Early on in my life, I didn't really question why these things were. I never questioned why someone decided to remake something. It always seemed to make sense because usually that effort was validated in this new version of an older story. One of my favorite films of all time would be John Carpenter's version of The Thing, which, of course, originally came out decades earlier and in black and white. Style-wise, story-wise, it was significantly different. I can't even say I really remember the original, but John Carpenter's version struck a chord with me. And despite the fact that it had already been done, he added something to that work that inevitably proved any reason to remake it in the first place. Now, it wasn't something in the way of, let's say, Psycho, which was remade, again, decades after it was done with Vince Vaughn. And while technically it proved to be a wonderful exercise in shooting something shot for shot, I questioned why that had to be done in the first place. As a teacher, I would often give assignments that in order to get students to learn, had them recreate existing works. Now, teaching in video production, this is a pretty simple equation here. In order to remake something that's already been done professionally, one has to mimic the techniques and decisions made to create that in the first place. And so from a video production perspective, I feel that was a pretty effective assignment. However, in the real world, in the entertainment world, I have, since childhood, repeatedly had to question the decisions that filmmakers have made in regards to recreating some of the classic films that have come out in recent times. The most notable example I could give would be of the film that I have tattooed on my arm. That would be George Romero's 1978 version of Dawn of the Dead, which, if you know anything about his films, he made a trilogy of zombie films. And that trilogy, of course, set off the mythos of zombie lore and led to things like The Walking Dead and things that we know today as pretty standard as a typical movie monster or even an archetypal movie monster. In any case, in 2004, George Romero's Dawn of the Dead was remade and released. And when I saw it, I had mixed emotions. First of all, being the nerd I was and am, I was following it from the first rumors. I even got a bootleg copy of the script online just to see how they were approaching George's material and the things that maybe I found to be effective or even special about that film. Upon reading the script, I seemed to connect with it on a level that made me understand why they changed certain things. But I already started becoming suspicious. Suddenly there's not just three characters, there's eight or nine, and it really diverged significantly from the story that I had known my whole life. And of course, when I saw it, I realized, wow, this is a complete departure from what the original Dawn of the Dead was, which, if you know that film, you understand that George liked to inject societal commentary into his films and make them an undercurrent of his storylines. Where on the surface, you would have monsters and blood and guts. Just under that, there would be his message or his comment. Going back to 1968 for Night of the Living Dead, there were a lot of comments on racism and the political turmoil of the time. And with Dawn of the Dead, heading into the 80s, the idea of consumerism and the birth of the shopping mall, the imagery of mindless, shuffling corpses in a mall, returning to that space because that's what they knew, and blindly clawing for all of these possessions. That was George's commentary on consumerism. He felt he needed to make a statement on that idea. And so that sprouted into what would eventually be wrapped in the story of the original Dawn of the Dead. Now, I'm not going to recap what happened in the remake because really it had nothing to do with that. It barely resembled that original story, which I then went even further at the time in my reaction to the film and then asked, why would they even name that film after the original? As if to say, this is that movie, but just a new version. It really wasn't. It bared little to no resemblance story-wise, and if anything, only did tongue-in-cheek references to the original to let you know, hey, we're giving a nod to George and his original film. I had an issue with the fact that they took the name, because if you're saying that it's a reimagining or a recreation, there should be something tied to that. And as mentioned with John Carpenter's The Thing, I feel like that was a very significant update and re-envisioning of that original black and white film. What Dawn of the Dead did in 2004 was almost a commercialized parody without making fun of the original. While I loved the film, don't get me wrong, that was a great film, I still took issue with the fact that it was named after the original when it bore no resemblance. It should have been given a different title because there were certain elements that were completely missing, that consumerism idea. Even the idea of running zombies being the threat and changing the entire dynamic of the film and the story, to me, I saw that as an obvious cashing in of the commercial success of films like 28 Days Later, which suddenly re-amped the entire zombie industry and genre by injecting literally testosterone into the storytelling and getting it to a point where we're not thinking about these monsters in a way that scares us on a psychological level. It's more a physical, I'm being chased and hunted level, as opposed to that slow motion apocalypse that George birthed in Night of the Living Dead, where our cockiness of thinking that we are so much faster and so much stronger than these things makes no difference whatsoever because they eventually overrun us. And it's our ego that eventually becomes our downfall because we think that we can handle them. That's one little story element that was key to George's original films and in particular this film. So in any case, this is not a criticism necessarily of Dawn of the Dead, the remake, but it's a question of how the decision-making process led to that film being a remake, as opposed to, hey, let's make a zombie film for the new millennium. It was, no, let's remake George Romero's film. You have to question, why would it need to be remade? Is it necessary to approach it as a remake? Or should you just take some ideas from it and create something new? This doesn't just apply to horror films. One of my favorite films in the world, it's actually part of another series, Ocean's 11. Steven Soderbergh is a huge influence on me as a filmmaker and as a director. It embodies everything about a film that I would want in terms of entertainment value, in terms of comedy, in terms of craft and quality of the filmmaking. And on top of that, it's actually a remake of the original. And yet, there are films that are remade, and because of how they are done in the next iteration, they add to the history of that particular story. I remember in the 80s seeing a film called Little Shop of Horrors, which was a remake of a black and white version. And that film really broke the door down for me on this whole mystery of the musical and really got me to appreciate the musical and soundtrack qualities and the performance qualities of typical stage plays and things that I wasn't exposed to at the time. And so, of course, the remake question doesn't just apply to horror films. It applies to all genres. But the point is that when you look at the successes versus the ones that are not so much, you still have to ask these questions. In the late 90s, I saw a film called Ringu, and it was a Japanese horror film that I felt was pretty terrifying. It was remade for American audiences with a bigger budget, better effects, and so on and so forth. And yet it was Americanized. It still was an effective way to re-envision the film, especially so it could cross the cultural boundaries. And so to see the remake of The Ring and have a perspective from the original Ring, I really found that to be fulfilling, and I understood. Of course, what that led to was this outpouring of what they called J-horror and K-horror for the Korean titles, where we pilfered all of those ideas and films to remake them for our audiences. And functionally, I understood why, because then you were remaking things and it became a little bit repetitive, and ultimately, it didn't really accentuate or enhance the original story the way it was with these original films. When I think about remakes, I think to a series that I showed my students when I was teaching, and it's actually a web series called Everything is a Remix by Kirby Ferguson. And it's a great analysis on the nature of ideas and creativity and originality, that if you have an interest in remakes or even just an interest in film and music at all, it's something worth watching, especially if you're a creator. Because really it asks the questions of, first of all, why? But then it breaks it down even more to the concepts of originality, which is to say, what is original? Ideas are not just formed out of thin air. They are built from something else. And in terms of creativity and art, there's always some motivating influence that helps inspire or develop another idea or another storyline. The most notable example that he goes through is when George Lucas made Star Wars, he was really just repurposing and recreating storylines from old westerns and old samurai films, and really using that idea of the hero's journey and just changing around the characters and the settings. But really, the plot was basically the same, the character arcs, the action was exactly paralleled off of existing historical stories and mythology. The series went as far as even to show how specific scenes were directly lifted from previous stories, whether they were westerns or samurais and other historical films, or not even historical, but more recent, at least in George Lucas's life, that he took certain story elements and scenes and events and just repurposed them into his story and then put it all in space, and suddenly it's completely new and different, which that's the essence of the remake or the remix. According to Kirby, it's that originality comes from taking several different ideas that already exist and putting them together in a new way that no one has seen before. And that formula produces something that is original, something that is, quote, new, when really it's not new at all. It's just a re-envisioning and a new combination of old ideas. But when it comes to remakes, I'm not sure what has happened today. And I don't know if I sound like an old curmudgeon, some kind of film soapbox complainer. I'd like to think that I don't. I like to ask the questions, and I like to dive into why I'm asking the questions in the first place. I think it's better to have more questions than to think you have answers. So in the case of remakes, I've been asking myself for quite a number of years now, especially in recent years, why? Why did that need to be remade? Because sometimes you watch something and go, man, this needs an update. You know, in horror, it's a little bit more literal as far as looking at the story elements and going, yeah, this could use an update. But in other genres, it's a little harder to decipher what the motivations would be to remake something. You know, in recent times, we've got a remake of The Lion King. It's going to be live action and things like that. So that's a new element that's added to it. And of course, it's presenting it to a new generation that maybe is not familiar with the 2D animated version. Things like The Jungle Book. But then there's things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which to me, in the 90s, when the live action version was made, as a fan of the comics and even the cartoons, it was exciting to see that new dimension of these characters. But now, the reimagining of it in recent years and these new films that came out, I couldn't help but look at them and go, why? Is it holding that essence of what those original works were and what they meant to kids my age at the time? I feel like Lion King and Jungle Book, because of their association with Disney, it's a little bit more timeless, along with the other, quote, classics that are constantly represented to a new audience and a new generation. However, I didn't feel the same way about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So now we go down this strange path that with the horror genre becomes even a little bit more indecipherable. In that same way, it's also more cut and dry. The reason I feel it's hard to decipher why a horror remake is made is because, quite frankly, it's been done throughout film history in a sense that because of technology and special effects, that horror films, utilizing those tools pretty heavily, can use updates from time to time. But then there's those strange examples where, like Dawn of the Dead, it is questionable why that would need to be made. When you look at Dawn of the Dead from a special effects standpoint, practical physical effects by Tom Savini, that's considered a masterwork, despite the fact of a budget not being matched at the Hollywood level. What that film achieved at the time still today has an effect on the industry and on the art form. It's in recent years when films like, let's say, Texas Chainsaw Massacre suddenly gets a remake. I didn't quite understand why you would remake Texas Chainsaw Massacre when the original was a seminal film that is a landmark in horror history amongst Psycho, Night of the Living Dead, The Exorcist. These are films that made their mark because of the auteurs who made them. In the case of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Tobe Hooper made something that shocked audiences and that truly left an indelible mark on people everywhere because of how harrowing the story was and how truly frightening that style was. But then suddenly they decide to remake it, and there's a certain self-awareness in doing a remake that is so popular that I think somehow damages any efforts to reimagine it, because you're trying to use those original elements, but you're doing them again. And in a sense, because you're walking in the footsteps that have already been set, we're all reacting to the fact that that's been done and we know the original. So it's almost like the knowledge of the original is what makes these remakes tolerable. That shouldn't be the case, because if you see both, you should be able to get something special from each of them, enough so that they stand on their own. The remake shouldn't rely so much on the original. And when I saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, I felt it was very empty, and it tied more so to the aptly named torture porn category of films like Saw and Hostel that seemed to go down a different road than previous horror films, where now we are just focused on the brutality and the agony suffered by characters as opposed to their story or their journey. Even something like Halloween being remade was questionable, despite the fact that John Carpenter, his original version of Halloween still stood strong. And of course, that melody is something that won't leave anyone's head who has heard it within the last 3 decades. But then Rob Zombie comes along and decides, I'm going to remake this film. And it somehow turns out to be just another Rob Zombie show, very similar to House of a Thousand Corpses and his own films and his own style and his own trademark imagery, just inserting the Halloween storyline somewhere in there, which just didn't connect with me. It didn't make any sense. I as a fan of George Romero, would never make or remake one of George's films. If I had enough respect for the work, I don't know why I would choose to remake it just because I could. I don't feel that my take on things is special enough to take someone else's version and just do it my way. Unless that version called for it, unless the original needed to be re-envisioned in some way or could use an update, or that original was then kind of combined with a newer idea or a newer interpretation of it. Probably the most disturbing version of that disappointment to me came when they remade Nightmare on Elm Street, a film that Wes Craven, like John Carpenter, made the original, and there were a whole litany of sequels that followed. To have it remade, missing an essential element, which in my opinion was the lead actor, Robert Englund, that was a mistake. In the first place, the first film hinged on his character and his portrayal of this villain. And his charisma and his personality and his style as an actor really defined that film. And then Wes Craven's storytelling and filmmaking style, that combination of things made for a perfect storm for what the original Nightmare on Elm Street was. And somehow the remake completely missed it. Robert Englund even tends to agree with the fact that they kind of dropped the ball on that one. His response, though, was more to do with the timing of a re-release of the original Nightmare on Elm Street films on DVD, and then suddenly there's this remake that just doesn't quite match up. But what I think he's too proud, or at least too humble to say, is that he made that character, he made that film, and Wes Craven authored it, and that's really what the magic was in that original. But in the first place, why try to recapture that and redo it, if not just for money? I hate to call out the financial aspects of these things, but really, we are talking about money when you're cashing in on a name or a brand. And so many times, especially in what, for lack of a better term, is a bleeding genre, horror just slaps a title on something that you'll recognize, that you'll buy into, when really it has nothing to do with that original name or title. Now, on occasion, there are instances where these reiterations and these recreations of an original story are somehow their own progression or evolution of that story. Ideally, a remake should use enough of the original source material, but make it into something else. I remember reading a book called I Am Legend, and I remember at the time I was really moved by the story because, being a fan of apocalyptic tales, I loved seeing the connection between I Am Legend and the movie that it actually inspired, which was the original Night of the Living Dead. George Romero often said that he ripped off Matheson in Night of the Living Dead because he took that idea and that storyline and he changed vampires and just made them ghouls, as he says. While that story has been retold over and over, you've got Night of the Living Dead, you have Vincent Price and The Last Man on Earth, Charlton Heston and Omega Man, none of these can really be considered remakes because they are just different interpretations of that story. It's a repurposing of the essential story elements, and it's a creation of something new altogether. I still loved Will Smith's version of I Am Legend, which didn't even beat around the bush. It's saying, yes, this is the story, and yes, it's the same character, Robert Neville. However, clearly the Hollywood powers that be really shaped and molded that film into what it was, where on the good side, the visual effects and the production design were all just amazing. And Will Smith's performance is excellent. But then, of course, on the other side of that, the fact that the enemies, spoiler alert, are all computer-generated really took away from what that original tale was, at least from a film perspective. Because in a book, you could read this, and as a story, it reads really well. But in a cinematic sense, seeing very kind of cartoonish monsters chase after Will Smith didn't work for me. So I was torn on this one, but yet I did understand. The last incarnation of Matheson's story to be successfully done wasn't since something like Omega Man with Charlton Heston. And so to redo it in this day and age with our current societal climate and elements of this generation, I thought that was a good choice. So then where do we land with all of this? Am I ranting about remakes? Not really. I think I'm having a conversation and exploring questions to the idea of creativity, which I seem to always go back to, and the idea that you can repurpose ideas and reuse them because you have to, because someone already came along and had that idea and made it great, but you can make it better by adding your own ideas to it. There are instances where I feel like it's completely and totally appropriate to remake something, and regardless of whether or not it needed it or not. And that's when the artist who originally created it decides to remake their own work. In my experience, I've often enjoyed that, where someone goes back to their own work and remakes it. George Romero is no exception to that. He remade his own film, Night of the Living Dead. Of course, that ties to a financial story of how they lost the copyright on the original Night of the Living Dead and essentially didn't make any money off of it. He was able to revisit that story and reimagine it himself and then have Tom Savini direct it. It was a great work and a great iteration of a story that we all know and a story that we love. So on occasion, you see that an author, particularly in film and sometimes even in music, go and revisit a work to update it or to do something with it that hadn't been done previously, that they weren't able to accomplish for whatever reason. Things like that, I feel, are okay. These are situations that I feel, regardless of whether it needed it, if the author wanted to do it, they could, because we're all perfectionists in the sense that we sometimes can't let our own work be. I made a short film when I was in film school, and I, for years, wasn't happy with how it turned out, not just because of my inexperience as a filmmaker, but because the story was reshaped and turned around from what I initially had intended. So in recent years, I actually went back and I rewrote that story, and I wrote it properly in the way that I originally wanted to write it, and that became a short story that's here on this podcast. If you're interested in reading that story, it's called Lightning in a Bottle, and it's essentially a remake of a short film I wrote and directed called Fred's Lucky Day. I hope you seek out the former and not the latter, because the short film is not necessarily something that I want to represent my filmmaking skills or even my writing skills, but I'm proud of the quote remake of that in the originally intended output of what the short story ended up being. So I guess the lesson here is really about reinvention, because in my eyes, reinvention can be innovation. That's where you can take something that's been established and add something to it or combine it with something else to make something completely new. The problem with remakes is that it could also be just a recreation, and recreation can just be stagnation, just walking in those footsteps that are already there. It doesn't add anything to what the original work was. And if you are at a point where you're having to decide, should we do this or not, that's really the filter it should run through. Is it going to add anything to what was already done? I really love hearing when people ask Stephen King his opinion of movies made from his books. Stephen King's stories have been made and remade and re-envisioned for decades. His books and his stories serve as the genesis of so many other works. But when he would be asked about particular interpretations that didn't go so well or weren't received so well or that even he didn't like, I loved his response. They would say, "Stephen, how do you feel about so-and-so ruining your book?" Speaking of the filmmaker who decided to make a movie out of the book and the film did not turn out that well. And he would turn to them and say, "He didn't ruin my book. They're right behind me on my shelf." That's a great way to look at it, because the original work is always going to be there, and theoretically, if it's good enough, nothing should be able to touch it. It can only add to how great that is. And even something that is a bad interpretation of it should add to the greatness of the original work, because it will only emphasize just how good that original work was. And so, looking at this little rant that started out as a complaint, but is more so a positive reflection on the nature of creation and creativity, I'm pretty happy with this. I don't think I need to remake it again. I think I've added to this conversation with myself, and I feel good about it. And ultimately, if you watch something, whether it's a remake or whether it's an original, You like it? You feel good about it? That's all that matters.